Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Before he shot to fame as the scene-stealing Jin Yang on HBO's Silicon Valley and in the film Patriot's Day, my guest Jimmy O. Yang was an immigrant from Hong Kong, learning about English and comedy by watching BET and trying to fit in California. His traditional upbringing and his parents' expectations collided with Yang's experiences DJing at a strip club and slowly building a stand-up comedy career. Yang recounts his journey in a new memoir called How to American, An Immigrant's Guide to Disappointing Your Parents. Jimmy O. Yang, welcome to The Roundtable.
Hey, Ian.
Why did you want to tell your story now?
I wanted to take some time off of stand-up. I want to tell something a little more honest and humorous in the same way. But in stand-up, you know, you expect to get a laugh every few seconds. But I want to tell these stories that's more truthful, more relatable, and hopefully, you know, when other immigrants read it or any person that's tried to assimilate before or has been an outsider, they can feel, you know, a little more normal by reading my story, knowing that, you know, other people has gone through it too.
What was one of the hardest things about being an immigrant to this country?
Man, I think it was when I first came here, I didn't really have a good grasp on the English language. I learned English in Hong Kong how American kids here would have learned Spanish, but conversationally, I couldn't really hang, especially the slangs, right? Like, the first day of school, I think a girl came up to me and said, "What's up?" They really didn't teach me that in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. I just, like, looked up in the sky and then stared at her. And I wasn't used to a lot of things, you know? Like, it was a culture shock. Even restaurants, American restaurants I was used to in Hong Kong, like Pizza Hut. The Pizza Hut in Hong Kong is like a sit-down restaurant with, like, seafood pasta and, like, real gourmet food. And then I passed by the Pizza Hut in L.A., and it was just like a pizza oven hole in the wall. And I was, like, very disappointed. Like, how is the authentic American version actually crappier than the Chinese Hong Kong version?
When did you realize that you were funny? Were you funny right away in English, or how did that happen?
My dad was always a very funny person, and I was always the youngest in the family. So I think I use humor to diffuse any arguments in the family and things like that. And also when I came here, you know, I've always been like a pretty small kid. So I had to use humor to kind of defend myself, you know. So instead of fighting or, you know, getting into arguments with people, I would just joke. And when people would talk trash, I would have to talk back. So that's kind of how I developed my comedy through necessity of defending myself when I first came here. And I never knew it was going to turn into a career at all, because stand-up comedy wasn't really a thing when I grew up in Hong Kong. Now there's a stand-up comedy club out there, but when I grew up, I never watched stand-up comedy. So when I stumbled the first time onto an open mic, I had no idea this could be a career, just like my parents thought I was crazy, and there's no idea, I mean, no way this could make me money. But eventually, you know, I think what's great about America and comedy and art in general is a lot of times, if you just disappoint your parents a couple years, you know, go try to pursue your dreams and you work hard enough, you could make anything happen.
A lot of your book deals with your relationship, especially with your father. Your mother had moved back. I don't know exactly how it worked out, but your mother went back for work to Hong Kong and you were with your dad, and your dad had expectations for you to, you know, sort of live a traditional life. What did it take to get him to see your success in comedy and in acting?
I'm not sure if he still sees it. I mean, I get it. I don't blame him at all for, you know, that school of thought, because he grew up back in the day. He's, I think, 70 now, so I think he grew up in the 50s, where there was a communist revolution in mainland China. He wanted to go to, you know, university. He couldn't. He wanted a real steady job. He couldn't. So, you know, he moved to Hong Kong and then later on to the United States for me and my brother's opportunity in education. So we can have the things that he couldn't have. So I totally get it. So basically when I had a, you know, college degree in economics and then had a job offer in finance and Smith Barney, it's a pretty prestigious financial firm, that's basically all he could dream of that he never had, and that's all he wished for us. So when I took a very independent American spirited mentality of I want to pursue my dreams instead of doing this desk job, he doesn't get it, you know, and I empathize with that, right? But like I said, sometimes you just got to disappoint your parents. I don't think if you're not disappointing them, you're not really pursuing your dreams.
How much pressure did that put on you? I mean, you had to live with that every day.
Yeah, he used to send me careerbuilder.com emails every day and tell me, Jimmy, you know, Real People is hiring. You're not that funny. Like, the stand-up thing, I don't even know what it is. He calls it a talk show. Like, you know, go do your talk show at the Laugh Factory. It's not going to make you money. And it took years, but I think it was just, I don't know what it was. It was definitely added pressure, but I try to block it out, you know, knowing that hopefully one day if I do make it, then he would come around. And I think he did eventually come around with Silicon Valley. You know, he might not get stand-up comedy, but he gets television. He thinks he thinks me and TJ's interaction on the show is very funny. But he still doesn't kind of give it up to me. He's like, yeah, your stand-up's not funny, but Silicon Valley's very funny, because the writing on there is very good. So it's not quite giving it up to me. And he will straight up tell me, like, he wishes I'm a scientist still. Just a more noble job.
And the irony in that is that he followed you into acting. as soon as you found some success, it's something he started
doing. Yeah,
because
he's like, it's so easy, you can do it, I can do it.
Yeah. Did you like seeing him get involved? I mean, I know you worked sort of to get him cast in Patriot's Day as your father, the character's father. But were you at all resentful of him following in your footsteps?
Not at all. I enjoyed it. It always feels good to give back to your parents, especially there's an expectation in Asian culture to really give back to your parents. So it felt good to give back, not just, say, with my money, but actually giving him something to do that he enjoys, and he's earning his own money, which is very cool and awesome. But it did backfire, because at first he was like, oh, it's so easy, you can do it, I can do it. He literally said that. And I'm like, fine, you know, I'll sign you up with my agent, and you'll see how hard the auditioning process is. You're going to go do like 50 auditions, but you're not going to get one job. You see how this acting works. It's not that easy. And then he booked everything. He got every audition. Like, he got literally like the first 4 out of 6 auditions, which is unheard of for any actor. And it completely backfired, you know. Like, my aunt from China called us. He's like, she's like, Richard, you're such a good actor. Jimmy must have taken after you. So that was a bit frustrating, but deep down, you know, I'm very happy about that.
I'm glad you brought up auditions, because in your book, you include a database of all the auditions you went on, and a lot of them were not glamorous roles. There were roles you didn't book, you know, third guy in line, angry gas pumper, stuff like that. How did you keep after it when the batting average was just so low?
Yeah, I think one of my favorite parts of the book is the 101 auditions that led up to the 102nd audition, which was Silicon Valley. It was a bunch of random stuff. McDonald's chicken, McNugget commercials, Chili's commercial when I'm just eating a chicken wing, dog with a blog, teenage Chinese hipster, a lot of crap, right? But to me, like, just being on TV, any small role, like, you got to start somewhere. Like, being a stand-up comedian, to me, like, just being on TV, any small role, any commercial role, that was, like, that felt like a big break for me, you know? Like, my very first role that I did book was called Person in Line, and I had 2 lines on Two Broke Girls. And that was, like, monumental to me. You know, I didn't get paid much money, but watching that, like, seeing me on TV, myself on TV on the first time, like, I felt like I made it, you know? So it's just a step-by-step thing, you know? You go from that 2-line Person in Line part to maybe a guest star, to then maybe a recurring part. And then hopefully, you know, I did land on my feet, you know, with Silicon Valley, a series regular part. So, yeah, looking back, definitely, I didn't take anything for granted. And any role was a good role. I was just trying to get on TV because I know other comedian friends that's been working hard, super funny dudes, that's been working for like 15 years as a stand-up and never made it even a 2-line part on a network sitcom, you know? So I think each part that came along was very special to me. And that's why I wanted to share that audition log so you can see my progress and sometimes regression as an actor. And I think that's definitely one of my favorite parts of the book.
So tell us about your approach to playing Jin Yang. For people who haven't seen Silicon Valley yet, they should see it. It's incredibly funny. But Jin Yang doesn't speak English as well as you. He doesn't say much, but when he does say something, it really lands. And I'm wondering, as a stand-up and as someone who's acted a bunch now, is it harder to play a character like that where, you know, each word is at a premium?
I think I like it a lot. It's I don't really have to carry a lot of the plot, especially when the show first started. Like Jin Yang would just come in one scene, couple of scenes, and then do one-liner. And it was really fun. It was like, you know, coming off the bench and just hitting a couple threes. And I know the writing is so good, and I had such a good chemistry with TJ and the rest of the cat cast. It made my job a lot easier. And it was really fun. And it's a dream for stand-up comedians, because all we do on stage is try to make people laugh, you know, and that's Jin Yang's job as kind of like a sidekick comic relief on a comedy. And Jin Yang is a more fresh off the boat immigrant that doesn't speak a lot of English, but he has a lot of thoughts. He's a smart guy and a little conniving at times. So I like all those added dimensions, and it's great to get to play an immigrant character, because I always look at Jin Yang as myself when I first came to this country when I couldn't speak English very well or understand English very well. Jin Yang was basically me like 15 years ago when I first got to L.A. So it's something that I understand, and you know, something I can add dimensions and add my own story to. And that's why sometimes, you know, the improv and stuff like that, sometimes that come from my own immigrant experience, when Jin Yang starts repeating stuff just because other people are saying it, the way he looks at people, there's a certain amount of lostness, but thought behind those eyes, you know, and suspicion and judgment, possibly. So, yeah, I love playing that character as an immigrant myself.
Hello.
Eric Bachman, this is your mom. And you are not my baby.
Not now, Jin Yang, not now! Go back into your room!
Go for Ehrlich.
Eric Bachman, this is
you as an old man.
I'm ugly, and I'm dead, alone.
I'm gonna let him have this one. All right, well, I'm sorry to hear that, future me. What a terrible thing. I'll talk to you in several years.
What about his look? That's something you go into in the book as well. He has a very specific type of wardrobe.
He does. I think a lot of my characters begin... I begin molding a lot of my characters, you know, with wardrobe and the physicality of the character. Once you put on certain clothes, it makes you feel a certain way. And, you know, working with our costume designer, Christina Mangini, on... Silicon Valley is great. She got a great sense of humor. She worked on Curb Your Enthusiasm. She works on Drunk History. So, like, she knows what's funny and what works. And it's great going into the wardrobe fitting. And we're just trying to pick the crappiest looking clothes. Like, the worse I look, the funnier it is. And so a lot of stuff from Jin Yang's wardrobe, it looks like it's from the old country, or it's from, like, Goodwill, or it's... He kind of got a childlike... sensibility, just like a lot of people in Silicon Valley, not just Asian people in Silicon Valley or anything like that, but, you know, they don't care, and there's a likability to that and a relatability to that, which I like. And we got to this point, like, look, I don't really work out much, but I used to play some sports, so I'm like fairly athletic, and Jin Yang is not, right? Or it doesn't seem so. So we tried a few things, like a short sleeve polo and a T-shirt and stuff. And if you watch the show, you realize I never wear a short sleeve shirt. Even if I do, I'll have a long sleeve shirt under my short sleeve shirt, because my forearm apparently looks a little too veiny and like buff for Jin Yang. Look, it's not buff at all. It's just buff for Jin Yang.
Your book is called How to American, An Immigrant's Guide to Disappointing Your Parents. And as I was reading it, I was thinking, you know, we've been having this national discussion about immigration for the past couple of years. What do you think about the state of immigration politics in the U.S.? This is a country you came to and have, you know, succeeded in beyond your wildest imagination.
Mm-hmm. For me, the American dream is still alive and true. You know, I am here I am today through legal immigration. My family moved here, and I moved here when I was 13. That's a very formative. I'm still learning English. That's a very formative age. And, I don't think I would have been able to become an actor or stand-up comedian in another country. So it's definitely special to me, my immigrant experience and being an American. I wrote the book in a way that I didn't necessarily choose a side or try to preach anything in this political climate or force my opinion on anyone, because I think it's more important for people to just read an honest story in like a lighthearted, humorous way, with some emotional truth and heartfelt elements in it, to kind of see a first-person point of view immigrant experience through my eyes, through my journey, and then come up with their own experience. If that changes their mind about something, that's great. If it doesn't, that's fine too, you know? But I think it's important to just see a first-person point of view, a real experience, so people can empathize and see what it's really like to be an immigrant. And I think it's more important that way than to argue with somebody my opinion and force my opinion on them. And I believe in more, you know, just sharing my story and letting people come up with their own conclusions.
Okay, when is Silicon Valley coming back?
On Sunday, March 25th. It's going to be very exciting.
Can't wait. We've been speaking with Jimmy O. Yang, and his new memoir is called How to American, An Immigrant's Guide to Disappointing Your Parents. It's just been a pleasure to have you on the show, and keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks, Ian. My pleasure.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.